Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our final presentation of the day. My name is Trader Tim from eminimine.com, and we're going to be talking about trading the e-mini futures and specifically focusing on the morning session of the trading day. So that first 90 minutes after the markets open. The session is being recorded, and if you have questions, feel free to drop them in the chat box, and I'll do my best to answer some of those as we go along. But yeah, the next 45 minutes, we're going to go into kind of an overview of my strategy, how I look at the markets, and how you can trade the e-mini futures for just 90 minutes a day. So to give you a short outline of what we'll be talking about, I've got three very simple tools that you can use to help day trade. And regardless if you're trading the e-mini S&P, which is what I mostly trade, you can really use the techniques that I use over any different market, so long as you're day trading. Most of the examples today will come from the e-mini S&P, and we'll talk about how I identify good entry points, and then how you can not just get into a trade, but stay in the trade. And I'll walk you through how I manage my trades in a way that you can get out of the losers quickly and stay in those winners as long as possible. So for those that are new or unfamiliar with myself, like I said, my name is Tim Reset, and I blog over at eminimine.com. I've been trading since about 2006, originally from the Chicagoland area, and now I'm living out in Scottsdale, Arizona, and spend most of my summer in Colorado. A good way to get out of the heat. And so, growing up in the Chicagoland area, I had a lot of access to the Chicago Board of Trade. That's really where I got turned on to the futures markets. And so I primarily day trade futures, but I got my start actually swing trading stocks. So in around 2006, I started swing trading stocks, and that was, kind of in my younger college days. And then it was about 2008 that I started adding those e-mini futures in. And so being able to go down to the Board of Trade and, being down on the trading floor in the pits, mid-2000s, the technology had been around for a long time. The trading floor was pretty much drying up. Most of the traders that were down there were using terminals to, do some analysis and come into the pits to either put on their own trades, or they're just managing client orders and putting on the positions for bigger clients. So the folks that were down there kind of shooed my friend and I away from making a career out of the pits and turned us towards the electronic online trading platforms. And so because of that, we were put in touch with some traders who'd been trading since the 80s up in Lake Forest, Illinois. And that's kind of what really got us going with the e-mini futures, and specifically that the e-mini S&P. And so by having some really good mentors, it was a very good way to get started in trading with a good foundation. And I think, whether you've been trading for 20 years or you're just getting started, the more you can simplify and really add clarity to your trading approach, simplify your trading screen, simplify your thoughts and your technique that you're using, the easier it will make your trading decisions. Because if you have a whole bunch of moving parts, that's a whole lot to manage. And the markets are exciting and confusing at times. And so the simpler your approach can be, the simpler your execution can be in your stops and your trade management and everything that goes around your trading, the easier it's going to be to execute. So I've had the pleasure of speaking at a number of the traders expos and been involved a little bit with the CME downtown Chicago. So we may have crossed paths over there in Chicago at some of the expos, but you can always find me over at eminimine.com if you have questions after the presentation as well. Outside of trading, most of my trading is really done in the first 90 minutes of the day. All of my day trading, I really don't do much at the close, except for manage swing trade positions. Some sometimes I'll put on a hedge to cover, you know, a longer term position that I have on, and then manage any overnight positions. But those are all really taking place in the stocks, individual stocks versus a futures trade. I would never put on a trade and then decide, oh, I'm going to, you know, turn this from a day trade into a swing trade in the futures markets. All of those are just in and out same day. But so outside, you know, that morning trading session, I spend a lot of time outside, like to hike, really big into mountain biking as well. And so getting outside as much as possible and exploring is a really good way to kind of balance that time in front of the screen. If you are stuck, as I spent my early years, in front of the screen for 15, 16 hours a day, it's just not very sustainable over the long term. It may work for a couple of years. You know, I used to wake up for the European session, trade for a couple hours, go back to sleep, wake up for the NYSE open. And it really, really starts to wear on you. So shrinking my time window and really being focused for those first 90 minutes of the day has been a really big benefit to my trading. And I'm also I was born in the Chicago area and now living out in Arizona, an ASU Sun Devil as well, went to Arizona State. And you really can't beat Arizona in the wintertime. So a little bit about the kind of my style and the routine that I go through each day, and then we'll get into some of the specifics of where I place my trades and how I, the tools that I use and things along those lines. So obviously I'm, looking at the markets in the technical sense. Most of my trades are anywhere from, a couple of minutes to, if I'm really swing trading or if I'm really trailing my stop over the course of a trade and it's kind of going my way, it might last up to an hour, but not much longer than that. I don't take any trades in the first 15 minutes. So this is from the NYSE open. I like to, start my day kind of in the pre-market, get a glimpse of what's been going on in the overnight, look at where are we opening in relationship to the prior day day's close. And if we're gapping, are we gapping outside of the prior day's range? Where we open can really be a good indicator of, how much activity we might see in a day. If it's a small range from the prior day and we're opening near highs and all of a sudden we break the prior day's high, we have a better chance of seeing movement versus being stuck inside the prior day's range for the whole morning, where we just have an inside day and the agreed upon price from yesterday is where we're sitting today. So the first 15 minutes can be a little bit wild. There's one or two exceptions where I'll place a trade right off the open. But by and large, most of my trading is done kind of from that 15 minute mark and then up to the 90 minute mark. So as you'll be able to see throughout the presentation, I'm a really big proponent of less being more. And so the more you can simplify and clarify, the easier it is going to be to grow as a trader. And so if you do things to invest in your mindset, you will also help do yourself a service by growing your trading. I find that getting outside and doing things like reading are super helpful. You don't really have to just read about trading, and you don't have to necessarily go outside for a 10-mile hike. You can just go walk around the block or take a run over to the park. Reading a couple of pages when you first wake up. I know some people like to do yoga, sit and read the newspaper, drink your coffee. But those kind of, morning rituals where you're have some quiet time to read a few pages can really get those creative juices flowing in your mind. And more importantly, give you a really good mental fortitude and good control over your emotions. So if you come into the day and you just kind of open your charts and you start gunslinging and placing trades, you're not going to be able to be in a good headspace. So if you can create an environment that is built more upon a simple, clean foundation, then you can really build off that and start to scale your trading. And the more you can focus, the better you can focus, the quicker you're going to make gains. So I make a lot of analogies to sports because I'm pretty involved in competitive mountain biking. And in general, the types of challenges that we face in the sports arena do have a lot of parallels to the trading world. Another thing to think about is, or keep in mind, is that trading is just a piece of the pie and it's really a means to an end. So if you're turning to trading and you're new and you want to, if you're turning into trading because you want to scale back the amount of work that you're doing, it may not be the best fit. A lot of people I find, you know, are interested in some sort of passive income or operating some sort of franchise where they're not actually the ones doing the work day after day. They're just the ones cashing the checks. And while, you know, operating some sort of business or franchise is far from passive, there are businesses that you can operate that are very passive and take a lot less time commitment. And so just setting that expectation up front and knowing that, okay, if you're going to become a master trader, it would be like becoming a master woodworker or becoming a lawyer or a doctor. There's a lot of upfront time in front of the screen that you really can't pay your way to speed up some of that learning curve. But if you can be really focused and work smart and have good process goals along the way and not just be focusing on, oh, well, I want to make $500 a day. Instead, focus on the little things that can help make you a master of your craft. Now, each day you can take a step forward. And if you can become 1% better a day, you can really quickly become a lot better in a short amount of time. So I find that, long-term goals are super helpful. And like I said, obviously coming from a kind of an athletic background, having process goals as well as a long-term goal can really get you over some of the hurdles that will come. And I think a goal that a lot of people have that they don't always realize is they want more time to do the things they want to do. And so trading is great because you can, in a lot of ways, do it from anywhere. But just know that in order to be a great trader, there is a lot of time commitment up front. Just like when the game's on the line and you're shooting that free throw and the pressure's on, when you're watching on TV and it seems effortless, just know that there were thousands and thousands of repetitions of practicing free throws with noise, distractions, hands in your face, and all of these things to make it so that you don't have to think when it's game time and pressure's on the line. So the more you can do consciously up front, the better intuition you can build, and then it's almost becomes unconscious and it just kind of becomes this repetition every single day. And that's the one really nice thing about day trading, especially if you're focusing in on one market and one time frame. You're just kind of, it's not the most exciting, but it's kind of put on repeat day after day. So let's get into some of the nuts and bolts about the tools that I use. The first one is what's called a tick chart. So rather than the traditional, like a 5-minute chart or a time-based chart, the tick chart is just a way of looking at the market instead of over a period of time, it's a period or a number of transactions. So each bar is formed after a certain number of transactions take place. So rather than 5 minutes or 10 minutes and the candle closing, I use a 512 tick chart for the E-mini S&P. So after 512 transactions take place, the candle closes and then the next candle begins. And so if you have a lot of candles forming really fast, that's an indication that there's a lot of transactions coming through. If it's after hours and the candles are taking a long time to form, that's an indication that there's not a lot of volume and you probably want to stay out of that market. I won't go too much into the, why 512 and not 500. Some of that has to do with some of the going way back to like the very binary computer coding and things like that. But if you go too small, you end up with either a whole bunch of noise or not enough transactions to really make anything out of it. And if you go too big, then you end up with just not enough data to place any trade. So for the ES, 512 is a really good place to start. Same with the NQ, YM, and things like that. So it's directly derived from price. It's not really, I wouldn't really consider it an indicator, just a way to view the price data. So if you were looking at a tick chart side by side, as we're going to do here, with a regular time-based chart, it would look the same. If you've got candlesticks on there and you hide the x-axis, it's really not going to look any different. It's just that each candle after 512 transactions take place, then the candle closes, versus each candle being like a day to form or a 1 minute or a 3 minute candle. So the next thing I like to pair with that is what's called a Hakanashi candlestick. And it's just a slight variation of the traditional candlestick. So you still have the high, low, and close, but the start of each candle begins at the midpoint of the prior candle. So this way, it helps clean up the chart a little bit. And this is what, so on the left is a traditional candlestick chart. On the right, same time frame, just with the Hakanashi candlestick turned on. And you can see, you know, I have my chart set up in Thinkorswim with red and green bars, but doesn't matter if you've got, you know, filled or unfilled or black and white. It just helps clean up the chart and show the trend a little bit better, I find, especially when you get into periods of range bound action. It can really help define and just be a little bit easier on the eyes. It's by no means a requirement. I just find that it helps clean up my charts. And I'm really only using the Hakanashi on the 5-12 tick chart. If I'm looking at a daily chart or a 15-minute chart, I just use the traditional candlestick. Because on those larger timeframes, you know, I want to know what's happening with the price action over the course of that candle. You know, a hammer, a big body candle, a spinning top, you know, these patterns that the, you know, just the basic candlestick patterns do tell us a lot about what happened over that time period. But for the really small time frame on the 5-12 tick chart, I like the Hakanashi candlestick. And the other thing it does is help make the trend change a little bit more obvious. And so when we get a little bit further and start going into, you know, looking for entries, the change in trend is an indication of, you know, a new trend starting. One trend is ending and possibly a new trend is starting. And those are the areas that I want to be, you know, actively placing trades. So when you put the two together, you combine the 5-12 tick chart with the Hakanashi, you just get a nice visual representation. And it's a little bit easier, I find, to spot those trend changes. So again, same time frame. The left is the traditional candlestick, and then the right one is the Hakanashi. Pretty easy to tell here, you know, when you're in a downtrend. But when you get going sideways, it can be a little bit, it can be more helpful to see, okay, we've got a couple of bars up, a couple green bars, a couple red bars, a couple green bars. And when you're in a strong trend, you don't get these little fake outs where you have, you know, a little bit of a, you know, green bar put in on the downtrend, a couple of green bars put in, and they can sometimes scare you out or shake you out of a trade when you're just looking at the Hakanashi. Since it starts at the midpoint of the prior candle, it continues that trend in the color bars, and a lot of times can help keep me in a trade for quite a bit longer. So let's talk about identifying the trend. Most of us are probably familiar with just the basic market structure. You know, we've got these kind of advancing and declining, or we'll call it stair stepping, or some people call it waves. But we, you know, the market doesn't go straight up. It kind of makes its way up and then pulls back and then goes up a little bit and pulls back. And so you have all of these, you know, up and down movements. And throughout the day, that's what we're looking to capitalize on these swings that occur throughout the day. Overall, the daily candle might be up, but intraday, you might have a half an hour of the market moving down and then a half an hour of the market moving up. And you know, you can, you know, take out 4, 5, 6 points on the ES pretty reasonably without a huge daily range. And so all of this up and down price action is, you know, derived by human behavior. And so those emotions, fear and greed, as we all are familiar with. And then going to kind of the basics of what make up a trend, uptrend being higher highs and higher lows, downtrend being lower highs and lower lows. Just like a football team would start the season going back to the basics, even in the NFL, people have been playing for 10, 15 years. They're always going to start the season looking at the fundamentals of blocking and tackling and doing the basics well, so that, again, when you get into those high pressure situations, you don't have to think, you know exactly what you're going to do before you're going to do it without thinking, and you can react instantly. And so, you know, a good exercise is just printing out a daily chart or a 5-minute chart and just going through and kind of looking at the swing highs and the swing lows that make up the trend, and kind of, you know, mark up, okay, here's an uptrend, here's a downtrend, here's a period of no trend where we're just going sideways. And that can be a good way to help train your eyes so that when you are looking at the market in real time, you can spot the trend changes a little bit easier. And it's when we break a swing high or take out a swing low that we have the potential for a new trend to begin. So you can go through and mark, you know, HH or LL and just mark the lower highs and lower lows. You can go through and just kind of look at, okay, how does this high relate to the prior high? And then how does the next high relate to the prior high? And you can start to kind of put together a puzzle over, you know, print out a dozen trending days of the ES and then mark that up and, you know, look at how those patterns relate to each other. You got 12 trending days all next to each other. Then print out a dozen range bound days and look at, you know, all the characteristics that make them similar. And then as you're watching the markets in real time, you can better spot those early signs of, oh, this reminds me of last Tuesday that was a strong trend day, or this reminds me just like yesterday where we went into a range and buying or selling in the middle of the range is quite dangerous. I'd rather be selling highs and buying lows. And so those types of more fundamental exercises, regardless of what strategy you're using, can be a really good way to help spot both the trend or lack thereof, as well as what type of day might be setting up. So let's talk about getting into the trade. So the first thing that I find important is waiting for a break of a swing high or a swing low. So if market opens up and we start moving down and then we take out a swing high, okay, we have the potential for the trend to be changing. We were moving down for 10 minutes. We broke a swing high. Now, instead of lower high, lower low, lower high, lower low, we've taken out the lower high and we could be going into an uptrend. And so spotting those trend changes, you know, those are the areas that I want to be active. I don't want to be, you know, trying to trade through chop or a slow lunch trading session. I want to be active near, you know, prior highs, prior lows, a prior day's close or an unfilled gap when we're breaking out into new highs or breaking down, you know, into new lows. Those are areas where you're going to have a lot more participation and a lot more potential for follow through. So as you have a trend change and you break that swing high, I just use a very basic 50% on the Fibonacci tool to give me an idea of, okay, here is the kind of halfway point. And so if I'm looking for a long setup, it's just a matter of drawing from low to high and letting the market pull back to that 50% retracement. The 50% number is not necessarily a Fib number. I'm just using that as a tool to filter out, okay, I've identified we're potentially starting a new uptrend and I don't want to just chase it and be buying at highs, but it's showing the first signs that we're in the early stages of an uptrend. So if I can let it pull back a little bit, I can use a limit order to get in. It'll help reduce slippage. I can set my order ahead of time at the 50% or just in front of it, I like to do. Then I can be positioned for if it takes off, I'm in the trade in the trend. And so just placing a limit order at the 50%. And then from there, you know, I liked on the ES, for example, I like to use a 2-point stop. So order gets filled, stop goes out. And then I like to use a 3-point first target. And both of those are, you know, not huge, but not super small either. 3-point first target over a 2-point stop is decent reward to risk in itself. And so what I like to do is cut my position in half. And so half of the position I'll take off at that 3-point first target. And so if it, you know, the market just goes up a little bit and let's say it goes up 3.5 points and then rolls over, I get to lock in some gain and I'm essentially in a guaranteed a winning trade. I will bring my stop up to break even there and at least lock in the 3 points. But then I still have half the position in case it continues on. And so if you're trying to do all in, all out, you only have one opportunity for an exit point. So like if you were just trading one ES contract, that's going to be the hardest to trade. You're always going to be questioning or second guessing your exit point because you only have one. So if you don't have the capital to be able to trade multiple regular ES contracts, I would encourage you to spend some time on the micros, you know, trade 4 micro ES lots so that you can get a feel for, you know, what it's actually going to be like trading multiple contracts. You know, it's not going to be a long-term thing. You're really not going to make or lose much money trading the micros. It's just there as a tool to be able to build some confidence, you know, take 50 trades and then look at the numbers. Okay, what's my average winner? My average loser? What's my expectancy? What's my reward to risk, my R multiple? And if the numbers look good, then you can move over to the regular ES and, start with 2 contracts, make another 50 trades, look at the numbers. If things are looking good, you can continue on or maybe even increase your contract size. If they're not, or maybe even use 25 trades, and every 25 trades, you review your stats. If they're not looking good, you can make some changes, maybe dial back the contract size or go back to the micros, but at least you have real data and you're building this, this numbers backed trade log that you can then see, okay, am I improving or am I declining? Sometimes there's weeks where there's just not a lot going on and you might not have many trades. And so it might take you a whole month to make 25 trades. Then there's other times where there's a lot going on and you're making 4 or 5 trades in an hour or so. So that's the getting in the trade part. When it comes to staying in the trade, so like I said, 2-point stop, 3-point first target. What I like to do, there's a couple of ways I like to trail my stop. I'm not really using like a 2-point trail stop that just trails it 2-point off highs. What I like to do is one of 3 things. So the first half of the position I just take it off at the 3 points. Some trades keep going, some trades don't, but by and large, from a pure statistical data set, doing all in, all out with a full trail stop is going to be the most profitable. But when it comes to real world trading, there's days that I can't trade or I choose to go on vacation and not trade. And so the 3-point first target really helps smooth out that P&L from a week to week basis. If you're doing all in, all out and you're trailing your stop every time, you can catch some really big winners. But if you miss a couple of days, and those happen to be the days that week where you get that 10 or 15 point winner, it can really mess with your stats. So while on paper, it might be more profitable, in a real world application, I find that having a smaller first target on the first half of the position and then trailing the second half of the position is a good balance. So the first way you can trail is to draw up the next retracement and use the 61.8, which is a fib number, as your failure point, and just put your stop below that number. So market moves up, pulls back, you get in and moves up again. You can draw from where your entry was up to that high and put your stop below the 61.8. Then the next way that you can trail your stop, especially I'll say this on the ES, you want to be the most patient at the start of your trade. If you tighten your stop too quickly and micromanage it and, I'm up 2 ticks, I got to go to break even, you're going to get stopped out and it's going to run away in your favor, the direction you wanted it to go, but you're not going to be participating. So keep your stop, keep that initial stop at 2 points, let the market get away from your entry and at least break the swing high that you're drawing your anchor to before tightening your stop. So these charts that I'm using and doing the actual execution on, these are the 512 tick chart with that Hakanashi candlestick. So I might look at a 5-minute chart or a daily chart to get some bigger picture, but the actual trading part and the execution part is all being done on that 512 tick chart. So at first, trailing the 61.8 is great, but then the market can start moving really quickly at times. And maybe it takes a nosedive and you're short and it dives off a cliff, or you're long and it starts to really accelerate to the upside. So another option that I like to do is trail each swing low. And this is something I'll do when I'm swing trading daily bars as well for individual stocks, but just letting the market come up and make a new high and giving it some room, letting it pull back. And when it makes another new high, I can bring my stop up underneath the white line here in the example. And I have tightened my stop based off of the market information. And then we come up, we make another new high, it pulls back, breaks that prior high, I can bring my stop up again and repeat that process until we take out a swing low if I'm long, and then takes you out of the trade. And so you're letting the market dictate when the trend is over, as opposed to just some sort of arbitrary target or calling a top or bottom. And then the third option, if things really get going quickly and taking off, what I like to do is trail each candle. And sometimes the candles are forming so fast that I'm just, you know, I've got my mouse on the trade ladder and I'm just kind of bringing up my stop. And then I'm sort of like hovering over on Thinkorswim. You can, you can tie your charts to your trade ladder, but if you have them separate, you just kind of hover over the candle and just find the low price and just kind of constantly bringing my stop up. And sometimes, I'm 2-3 ticks below the low of the candle and the next candle is already forming. But I find that by trailing each candle, when the market gets moving really fast, I can lock in a lot more gain as opposed to just hitting the flatten button or putting some other target out there and calling a top. By trailing each candle, if the market's really going to run, I mean, sometimes you'll run 10 points and not break a prior candle's low. And with the Hakanashi, that's also helping because each candle is starting from the midpoint of the prior candle. So it gives you a little bit more continuity with that trend. So those are the three ways that I like to trail my stop. And I find that, you know, it's easy to put on a trade with a stop loss and have it blow through your entry and then take you out right away. But if you don't have a plan for what you're going to do when it goes in your favor, that's when I see people run into the trouble of, oh, I'm up a point, I got to get out, or I'm up 2 points and I got 5 contracts on, let me sell 4. And they don't really have a plan for systematically exiting the position and doing it the same way each time. So it's repeatable. So you're not second guessing yourself. You just enter the trade. And if it stops you out, okay, you move on. If it goes in your favor, you've got a systematic approach to lock in gain along the way. So to kind of tie everything together, you don't have to use the tick chart or the Hakanashi, but I do find that it helps give me a clearer visual of the chart. And the cleaner I can make my charts with the less clutter or indicators on top of the chart, the easier it is for me to make trading decisions. If I'm sitting there waiting for 10 things to line up, I might never make a trade, or I might get close and it's like, well, it's kind of crossing the moving average with the stochastic and the average true range is this. And you want to be as objective as possible and remove as much of that subjectivity as you can. So yes, the entry itself, you know, where you draw your anchor points from could leave a little bit of, subjective nature. In general, you know, if we're looking at highs and lows, you know, those are defined price levels. If we're looking at, you know, the tick chart with Hakanashi candlestick, we have very kind of quantifiable and objective starting point. So you want to identify the trend so that you can identify where the trend is changing. And if we're in a strong uptrend, you know, it's totally fine to continue buying pullbacks in the trend, or in an ideal situation, buying a pullback, you know, the first or the second or the third one in the trend. And then from there, all you have to do is trail your stop. You don't have to keep exiting and then re-entering. And every time you re-enter, you put on a full stop out at risk by trailing your stop. You know, sometimes the market doesn't pull back all the way. And so by trailing your stop, you're able to capitalize and stay in those trades longer without taking on more risk. I find that looking for those larger support and resistance levels are a good way to kind of build in confluence. The prior day high, low, and close. In the case of, you know, right now we're near all-time highs, looking for the prior swing low on the daily chart, looking just to the left for a few days. And have we spent a lot of time at this price level, or are we just kind of going up, up, up without spending much time here? And if we can go up in a very quick manner, we can often come down in a very quick manner. If we spend a lot of time at the 4,000 price level, when we return, that resistance can then act as support and there can be a potential bounce. So, you know, a lot of these basic fundamentals that you're probably familiar with can certainly come into play. But sometimes you can learn so much and pick up so many different indicators and tools and different strategies, and you try to layer them on top of each other. And then you run into that, you know, paralysis of not being able to pull the trigger because you have 20 indicators that need to line up that never do. So then for the entry itself, just waiting for that swing high or swing low to break. break. Double bottoms and double tops are great patterns to watch for. And then when you take out the swing high, you can wait for that pullback. The idea would be not to chase the market, but instead let it identify the trend, keep that trend in the back of your mind, and then don't be afraid to get long as the market's pulling back or get short as the market's bouncing. So just using that real simple 50% retracement as the entry. I do all my trades and the entries themselves on the 512 tick chart. If you're going to enter on a larger time frame, you have to account for more volatility, a wider stop, and at the same time, a larger target. So there's certainly, you can replicate this across different markets or different time frames, but you do want to be careful of going with a wider stop, but not having a wider target. This actually works fantastic with options because think about buying on a pullback. The market is coming, if you're using, we'll just say directional options in this case, the market is going down and you're looking to buy a call. And when the market is up, you're looking to close out that position. And so, or let's say the market is up and you're looking to buy a put. So market's up, volatility's down, the price of the option is down. And in the market, and I like doing puts better than calls because then the market sells off, it moves lower, volatility increases, implied volatility of the option increases. And when it comes to like hedging, buying puts when the market is up, to hedge a longer term position as some insurance, you pay very little for them. And if the market doesn't do much, if it goes a little bit higher, you're not really out that much. But if the market does sell off, just the increased volatility alone can make those options really take off. And so I like to use just the SPY or the Qs, or kind of out of the SPY, the Qs, the IWM, or the Russell, or the Dow, DIA, whichever one is kind of the weakest, I tend to use as the short. So typically, like lately, the NASDAQ has been weaker than the S&P, and I've played a couple of hedges in by buying puts in the NASDAQ. Our downtrends haven't been that long, so they've only been a couple of day plays. But if we were to get a more sustained downtrend, like if you think back to last year, last year in March, by buying some put protection at a 50% short or just when the market's up, not to go too much on a tangent, but you can really do a lot of, put a lot of insurance on or have a lot of insurance for a very little cost and then capitalize when those, bigger market events happen. So yeah, it works very well with options. As far as managing the trade, 2-point initial stop. I did increase that the last 2 years from 1.5 to 2 points. I found that there are a lot of trades that I have go, 1.75 points against me, come one tick away from stopping me out and then turn around. So 2 points is a fine number. And then 3-point first target. So a little more than 1-to-1. If you were using something like 2 ticks or 3 ticks, you're going to get that hit a lot more often, like a 3-tick first target versus a 3-point first target. It's going to get hit a lot more often, but it doesn't really help you in the bigger picture of your reward to risk. So if you were going to put a 10 contract position on and exit 9 of the contracts at 3 ticks, you could catch 20 points on that last contract, but all it takes is one stop out to wipe out a whole bunch of gains. In terms of with options, I don't really use, going to a couple of questions, I don't use a hard dollar stop in the sense of with the ES, we're talking a 2-point $100 stop. With the option, it's more of, okay, if we go above this level, I want to close out the position. And a lot of times I just take the price of the option, divide it by 2, and that's roughly where I'd be okay with it going. I'm not just going to let it expire worthless. If I put on a hedge and it goes against me, and I'll just close it out, no big deal. So then that second half of the position, I think that's where a lot of people, you can get to a break-even trading after, sometimes 6 months or a year of trading. If you're really focused and have a lot of time to study the markets, you can make a lot of progress. But if you're stuck at break-even, you're probably, and if you're stuck at break even and you're not having, you know, catastrophic days that are just, you're making $200 a day on average, and all of a sudden you have a $1,000 down day. If that's not your situation, you're probably not staying in your winners long enough. So if you look at your average winner and your average loser, they're probably a little too close. You want to try to get that R multiple to like 2 to 1 so that your winners are twice as big as your losers. You know, as individual traders being trying to scalp and compete with the high frequency computerized algorithms is just not a winning proposition. So by expanding your targets a little bit, you know, you need that extra tick to get filled. So you need the market to really go 3.25. So it trades through your price to get a fill. So if you're just trying to trade 2 ticks or take out 2 ticks in a scalp, you really need the market to go 4 ticks in a lot of sense. So you just want to, you know, keep your reward to risk in check. And then that second half, yeah, trailing that second half by either the three ways we talked about, trailing the 61.8, trailing the swing lows or swing highs, or trailing each candle. And, you know, you may not be a day trader, and that same trail approach, I actually took it from my swing trading by trailing daily bars or trailing swing highs and swing lows. And so you just take that, move it to the smaller time frame, and voila, that's how I kind of tweak things to be more fine-tuned for the intraday ES stuff. But I use the same trail stop approach on the daily charts as well. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in. You can find more about me over at eminimind.com. And a couple months ago, I wrote a post over there. If you go to eminimind.com/success hacks, all about little things that I've done in the past that I find really helpful. Everything, you know, simple things like I like to listen to classical music when I trade, and other little routines and things that some of which are I pulled from my, you know, bike racing, but little tips and things that I found really helpful over the years. You might find them helpful as well. So, and I do, there's lots of other free resources and things you can read over there about my trading and my past as well. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I think I got most of the questions as we went. But if you do have more questions, my email is right there, tim@eminimind.com, if you want to get in touch.